When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Are we not the bestest of friends already?
Only in media.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the only podcast that is so bored it took the time to learn what a false nine was. It's time to do a little off-season stargazing. Tyler, Mark, hello. How are you guys doing?
Suffering in the heat.
Yeah, it's a little warm, right? Just a touch. It's just that like brutal portion of the off season too, where there's really nothing happening, and we're still like a month away from anything happening. You know, it's tough. Things are tough right now.
Here, I'm gonna go on a rant right away. Clear
the decks. All right, Tyler, we're gonna get to your introduction in just a second. Let's rant. Let's do this.
The problem is that there's so many interesting things to talk about, and none of it means anything because we have no idea what this team's going to look like with Pete DeBoer as coach. And so you can speculate all you want, and it has no attachment to reality until you see something on the ice. End of rant.
That's a pretty thorough rant. You know, short, to the point, effective. Tyler, do you agree, disagree?
I agree in the sense that not that I'm necessarily expecting the Stars to be, you know, necessarily radically different under DeBoer, but I feel like in that case, you do get a lot of, you know, kind of optimism that starts to seep through, especially with a long off season. You know, you suddenly start to get more and more pumped up as you get closer to the season. And so I think that's going to like lead to a lot of people just expecting, you know, big changes or big breakout seasons from certain players or whatnot. And then, you know, like Mark said, you know, you really have no idea what it's going to look like or if it's going to change at all or if it's going to change drastically or not. It's just, you know, we just don't know.
Yeah, I mean, we don't even know. As recently as like last week, I'm having conversations about who is more likely to stick with the big team out of that, you know, Bork, Johnson, and, you know, Stanko of all of the prospects. And that's, I think, the quintessential point is not only is it premature to have that conversation, but some of those guys might not even be in the AHL next season, let alone in the NHL. So it's the Schrodinger's team portion of the season, and that. As of right now, Dallas is simultaneously poised for greatness and on the absolute precipice of disaster. So we really aren't going to know any more than we know right now until, what, October, I guess?
Well, we can at least start talking at Traverse City. But, I mean, we're talking about a team that doesn't have a starting goalie and their best player from last year is unsigned. So where are you going to go?
Yeah, that's you know, kind of getting into the agenda from the call. We're obviously going to talk about the two big newsworthy items are the pending RFAs. We're going to cover that. We're also going to talk just a little bit about why we're in the situation we're in, meaning, you know, vis-a-vis how boring things are. And then we'll talk a little bit. We'll have a little bit of fun before we close out the call. But let's just roll up our sleeves. You mentioned, you know, this time last season, Dallas didn't really have a starting goaltender, of course, because Ben Bishop was injured and Anton Khudobin was injured and Braden Holtby, I don't believe, had been signed quite yet by this portion. And of course, Jake Oettinger was projected to be in the A. Well, fast forward a season and you know, Khudobin is injured again, but projected to be healthy for the start of the season, still technically on the roster. Bishop, of course, is done. And after a breakout season with the Stars, Jake Oettinger is a restricted free agent, still unsigned. And yeah, what's your, you know, we'll start with you, Tyler, for the hot take there. But how is your anxiety level 1 to 10, 10 being very anxious, 1 being not anxious at all about Oettinger not being signed at this phase?
I mean, I'll probably take the unpopular route here. I'm at a solid 1. I'm not worried about it at all. I think there's a lot of reasons in that I guess actually I think there's one specific reason why he's still remained unsigned. And so it doesn't really bother me. You know, it's going to get done. You know, the Stars know that they can't head into the season without Ottinger. Ottinger has said that he wants to play here. The only way that doesn't happen is if an offer sheet comes up, but you know, that's a whole discussion in itself. So yeah, I'm not worried about it. And quite frankly, I think the people that are worrying about it are doing so just because it's the middle of the off season. They have nothing better to talk about when it comes to hockey.
Yeah, so that's a great. So then, Mark, I'll put the same question to you on a scale of Shea Weber to Dustin Penner. How likely do you think an offer sheet is for Jake Ottinger?
Oh, I would say there is zero chance of an offer sheet. I mean, the player has to accept it. The only reason I think they haven't gotten a deal done is that they don't want to get one of the deals announced before they have the other deal pretty much hammered out.
Yeah.
Because the only thing that's going to cause an offer sheet here is if you know, the Robertson contract comes in and we know what the definitive number is on Ottinger and somebody, and it's not what Ottinger wants. And not even close to what Ottinger wants. And at that point, maybe if somebody just does doubles the price, then all of a sudden Dallas is screwed up big time. But that's really not the way Jim Neal operates. So
it's not.
I'm with Tyler.
And even the absolute highest end deal that Jason Robertson is going to get would leave you. And so, yeah, kind of taking the pieces into their components. The first is, as and I'm a solid zero on this one. He's not going anywhere unless the Stars want to get rid of him. Right. But, you know, step one, reason one is exactly as you mentioned, he would have to agree to go. Right. He would have to agree to leave. So, OK. We find a suitor that needs a number one goaltender that's willing to sign Jake Ottinger. Then you get into compensation, and the reality is the way that it works is, unless a team is willing to pony up multiple first round picks, right? You're looking at an offer less than $5 million a year, and to be frank, if somebody put that offer sheet in front of the Dallas Stars, they'd sign it and move on, right? And they'd find a way to buy somebody out, or you know, they'd negotiate either a shorter term, you know, they'd do something to get there. But the reality is, the type of deal that would require Dallas to walk away, right? Yeah, sure. If somebody were to come in and offer $6 million, right, $7 million forward money for Jake Ottinger, you can see a world in which the Dallas Stars say, okay, maybe we're going to pocket multiple first round picks and let somebody, you know, overpay for a goaltender. But, you know, he does the list of teams that has that kind of financial wherewithal and the list of teams that a young goalie would want to hitch his wagon to is, you know, just doesn't seem plausible to me. Right.
Right. And the whole thing is this flat cap scenario has, I think, wrong footed a whole bunch of teams. There just aren't a lot of teams out there with the cap space to do an offer sheet of that size. And if they do, they're going to have to make a humongous effort to juggle to get under the cap with a contract that size. And I think that's the teams with the space.
I was going to say, and the teams with the space probably don't want to give up the picks to do it.
Yeah, exactly. And so you're maybe down to a list of one, and I'd have to search to find who that one is. But I think that's kind of the story of the offseason, is the flat cap and how teams have managed to it. And I think there's a bunch of teams out there that had contract letters set up where they were anticipating the salary cap going up. And so they price their players in certain ranges, and now they're finding that they're scrounging to get the last couple of contracts filled to take care of their lineup. And there's just not a whole lot of money out there to do that. No. And so there's a bunch of NHLers out there, even old guys like PK Subban. You know, why is PK Subban not signed yet? This is kind of a no-brainer. I mean, other than the fact that maybe he's a third liner with declining talent. This is the kind of deal that in prior years would have been done a no-brainer. And now teams are just having to scrounge to get players signed at really, you know, the, the league minimum in order to fill out a roster because they've already used up all their cap.
Yeah, and, I mean, and that's, if you want a better better example of the kind of the latter the impact of the flat cap than, I mean, it's the fact that the cap stopped rising is why John Klingberg is going to wear a Ducks uniform next season.
I mean, if you look at, I'm looking at cap friendly right now, and keeping in mind this is with, you know, two big players, you know, unsigned right now, but I mean, Dallas Stars are have the fifth most cap space in the NHL right now. So, you know, above them, who has more are the Islanders, who, you know, probably have already allocated money to Kadri or moved money around or whatever.
They also have they've signed
Dobson as well. And then there's, you know, the Ducks, speaking of Klingberg, the Sabres and the Coyotes.
Who probably aren't spending anything,
not wanting to give up picks. You know, Andre probably wouldn't want to play there. So, like, if we're talking about just having the cap space to even offer Sheam in the first place, it's like if the Stars, who we're talking about, it's going to be a crunch to get both their remaining RFAs under a contract. If they're one of the teams that only one of five teams that has 10 million plus more in cap space, then I mean, it's just not going to happen. Like maybe if a team like a Detroit swung for it, but they also tried that with last year and didn't really work out. So they probably got cold feet. I mean, it's just not going to happen.
No, I mean, yeah. think about that list of teams. If you're even let's magic away the financial issues. If you're Jake Oettinger, which of those teams represents a better situation than the one you're in right now? And not just marginally better, right? But which one of those represents better to the degree that you would leave an organization where you've had success, an organization that is talking about you like the future, like an important player, like, you know, and it's not necessarily even binary, right? This is, you know, even if you don't see a deal that you like and you're Jake Oettinger, then that doesn't mean you don't sign. That just means you take a bridge, right? You pull the old, you pull the old Tkachuk, right? And you run your contract right up until the end of your RFA. And so there are many options that keep him in the Dallas crease that don't, you know, like even without getting the ideal deal that he wants more than anything else in the world.
Yeah,
and then you get into a bunch of window dressing. Like there was a thing, oh, with Linnerhurt, now does that mean Vegas? Then you get into a bunch of semantics. Well, Vegas would need to own their own second round pick to be in a position, even if Oettinger was willing to go there, right? So there's just so much stuff that at the end of the day, unless there is some kind of fracture between the player and the organization, and he's giving signals behind the scenes and saying, guess what, guys, I'm not going to sign. I don't want to be here, blah, blah, blah. But I think even in that kind of nightmare scenario, it's still in everybody's best interest to get him signed and then trade him.
Right. And I mean, you can kind of tell how serious the conversation really is, because if somebody was seriously taking a look at this, you'd be seeing articles about what the backup plan is. And I've seen zero of those.
Which is good, because from Dallas's perspective, there really isn't a backup plan.
Right. Right. It'd be a fun article to write.
Yeah, it's great. Now, I do, before we transition, because the other bit, and we will cover this ad nauseum, the other very real piece of this is Dallas has a more important RFA that they're, and no offense Oettinger, but a more important, bigger number RFA that probably needs to get done before they're in a position to address anything else financially. So that's got to be a part of it. But I do want to, it wouldn't be a stargazing segment if I didn't say something stupid and inflame public opinion. So what is your same 1 to 10 scale, 1 being not certain, 10 being entirely certain, and we'll start with you this time, Mark. What is your level of certainty that Jake Oettinger is a burgeoning elite NHL goaltender?
I think probably 7. I mean, the pedigree's there, the performance is there, the improvement is there. He's in a good situation where he has a goalie coach where he's comfortable, and the attitude's there. So I think there are enough things that are pointing in the right direction there that goaltenders are voodoo, but there's a preponderance of evidence that says that more likely than not, he's going to live up to the expectations.
How about you, Tyler?
Yeah, I'd say if the kind of expectation, the hope, you know, from Oettinger is that he's going to be, you know, one of the better goaltenders in the league. You know, he's going to be in that kind of top, you know, top 10 or higher, something like that. I would probably put it at a solid 8, if not higher. I've always been an Andre truther. That's why I've written so many damn articles about him. And again, I want to emphasize, you know, that idea, the expectation for him should be a, you know, not like, oh, best goaltender in the NHL or, you know, winning Vezina trophies left and right. But, you know, he still has a very strong pedigree. He's a very good athletic build. He has kind of all the right tools. He's progressing along well, you know, not to try and compare him to the best, you know, goaltender in the world, but Andrei Vasilevsky, if you actually look at their kind of career trajectories and how Vasilevsky pretty much took over for Ben Bishop on an already kind of talented team and basically started about the same age that Ottinger did of starting to get real NHL experience and, you know, was slowly ramping up and starting to look really good. And, you know, obviously now he's arguably the greatest in the world. Not saying necessarily Ottinger will get there. I mean, he very well could. He definitely has the potential. But it's even as much as we like to call, you know, goaltending voodoo or, you know, it's unpredictable or stuff like that. All the signs kind of seem to point in that direction that he's going to be one of the better goaltenders. And if it's far more likely that happens than it's not, that he's like, you know, another, you know, Marty Turco or, you know, pre, you know, collision Kari Lehtinen, where, you know, Stars fans are very happy and content with who's between the pipes.
Yeah. I don't. So this isn't me disagreeing, but I wouldn't have brought this up if I didn't have a cautionary tale, right? So you talk about pedigree, you talk about history, you talk about performance to date. So Jake Ottinger really looking at 2 seasons worth of work at the NHL level. So he started 24 games in 2020-2021, which, you know, COVID year. So that's a higher, that is akin to a starter's percentage load, right? He wasn't part-timer. 9.11 save percentage, and then I believe 2.36 goals against average. Started 46 games last season, 9.14 save percentage, 2.53 goals against average, right? So exactly what you're saying, right? We have seen an upward trend over the course of his career. In 70 starts, 77 games played, we're looking at a 9.13, 2.46 goaltender. So, you know, that's good, right? He's young. Those are good numbers, as you've seen on the ice, right? The Dallas Stars can certainly live with a goaltender that's able to perform at that clip. There's another goaltender who started 30 games in his first season, his age 20 season, put up a 9.17, 2.83 stat line, then started 40 games in his second season with a 9.14, 2.42 stat line, right? This particular goalie had Calder votes. Jake Ottinger did not. This particular goalie had All-Star votes. Jake Ottinger did not. Season 3, 8.77, 3.67. Season 4, 9.05, 3.16. I'm talking, of course, of Carter Hart with the Philadelphia Flyers. And there are trajectory issues with both teams, both rosters. There's performance. But the reason I bring that up is I know that it is a joke that we make that goaltending is voodoo, but goaltending is voodoo. And, you know, to counter the argument, the crowd, the school, why don't they just give Ottinger what they want or what he wants and be done with it? If you're Jim Nill and the Dallas Stars, as much as it pains my victory green heart to say this, it is not a given that Jake Ottinger is the player he was against Calgary or even is the player that he has been thus far in his career, right? This is not me hating on him, but these things happen. And so if you're the Dallas Stars, you really do have to weigh, you know, especially looking at the way that some of the other contracts they've signed have aged like sour milk, right? It is not necessarily a given that you want to throw a ton of term and a ton of money at a 23-year-old goaltender with 2 good, not great seasons under his belt and some really high highlights.
Well, and I think the other cautionary comp here is Jordan Binnington, where, you know, he comes out, he takes that team to win the Stanley Cup, and then, you know, he hasn't been bad, but he certainly hasn't been worth the contract that they gave him as a result of that small sample size.
And he hasn't held his starting job for the entirety of that contract.
Right, exactly. And Binnington, you know, the thing I have to say about Ottinger is that Ottinger has you know, a 180 degree different attitude related to both his personality and his willingness to work and calmness in the net than Bennington does. And so I view that as much more likely to be successful long-term than Bennington, but you don't want to sign a Bennington contract because they can go south. And if you spend too much on it, it's going to hurt.
Yeah. And I will say, and this is again, me being a huge Andre fanboy and truther, but I'll also say a lot of people will kind of point out when it comes to Andre, they'll say, they'll look at the regular season numbers and they'll say, okay, that's, you know, it's good, but it's not great. And yes, absolutely. If Dallas is looking at it through Calgary Flames tinted glasses and they're solely trying to pony up based on that one series, you know, that's a mistake. That's not representative of it. But I think a lot of times what you get with these younger goaltenders that end up fanning out or end up getting the regrets of the contract, you know, Carter Hart had a fantastic season. You know, Bennington, you know, won the cup. Fantastic. Matt Murray, same thing, you know, twice. It almost feels like to me there's kind of a bit of comfort in the fact that Ottinger hasn't put out some, you know, monster standout season, and that's kind of just been slow improvement, because to me that indicates it's not, you know, oh, he had a flash in the pan, an amazing season, he's the next big deal, overpay, oh crap, now we're, you know, regretting it. It feels more like, you know, assuming you don't overreact to that one, those seven games against Calgary, you know, you're kind of making a more steady bet like you would for any other player that they're going to just continue to improve and get better over time, rather than already thinking, you know, he's already one of the best goaltenders and ink in long term. Because I think, especially when it comes to goaltenders, that's where you run into trouble, where it's the small sample size of a single season or something like that, where then you kind of overreact to that performance. That's when the teams get into trouble, and that's when they eat the contracts either look really bad, or, you know, in the case of some of them, it's just like, okay, it just could be a lot better.
Yeah. And I mean, if you take a look at the trajectory, I'd say steady improvement is exactly what you saw with his career at BU as well. You know, he comes in as a freshman and is good, but then his sophomore year and then his junior year, he showed that nice steady progression that leads you to believe that it's not random. He's getting better because he's getting better.
Yeah, he's gotten better every single season, you know, since he started in college. You know, there's been no like backslide of, oh, he looks a little bit worse or having a bit worse stats or whatnot. He's accounting for the fact that, you know, obviously going up different levels of competition, but he has been just an up arrow.
Yeah. Which all of this, you know, we started this segment by saying none of us are worried he's going anywhere. And that's why this is a situation where it is in even the cap, you know, factoring in COVID and the cap no longer being flat eventually. This is a situation where it feels like it is in absolutely everybody's best interest to figure out a short to middle term contract that reflects Ottinger's growth and ability and positions both Dallas and the player to sign a longer, more representative deal once he's had more of a chance to prove himself.
Yeah, I think that's 100% correct. And the only other thing I can say is that Tyler's turned us both into fanboys here. So so good for you, Tyler.
100%. And of course, the larger reason that Jake Ottinger remains unsigned is that, as you mentioned, Dallas is sitting around $11.5 million with the cap space, which sounds like a lot until you consider that Jake Ottinger isn't even the best restricted free agent on his team right now. I'm talking, of course, of everybody's hero, Jason Robertson, and also sitting without a contract. And really, you know, to me, that's the deal, right? That's the kind of the domino that will fall. And that's the one that presumably Dallas is figuring out. So same question, what is your level of concern on the Robertson side of things?
I mean, it's kind of the same as Ottinger, except taken up about 20 notches. So if I'm a zero, then I'm still a zero, but who's going to be able to afford to offer sheet that?
Yeah,
I mean that's just you as a GM would have to think that is the core person who's going to build your entire franchise And I don't see anybody who is going to, one, think that enough to the point where they'd have to, they'd be willing to go through the work in order to massage their lineup in order to allow it to happen.
Yeah, I mean, let's just start here. Tyler, pull you into the conversation. If you're a rival GM, right, what is the number that you would have to throw at Jason Robertson to convince this Dallas Stars to not match it? So let's, for a second, let's sideline this notion that, let's just assume that he'll take the deal, right? What is the number that you would have to see as Jim Nill to think, you know what, I'm good, here you go?
I think you're probably looking at the 4 first round picks range when you're talking about 10 million, 10 and a half million, essentially. If you're looking at that magic number of, no, they're not. I mean, maybe the 8.4 to 10.5 range with the 2 first round picks, second and third, which I think is different from the case of the Stars, you know, because first of all, they're trying to win. They're trying to be a playoff team. They're trying to win. They're going to compete. They need Robertson to do that. If someone's going to be signing, trying to sign him to like an 8.5 or, you know, $10 million contract to begin with, you know, that's probably in the range of what you're maybe going to end up doing for a long term, you know, based on some of the recent deals that we've seen for like Robert Thomas and some other forwards, you know, probably in that 8.8 to 9 million range is where you're going to end up anyways.
Threshold from a compensation perspective, that 8.4 million to 10.5 million range would net 2 first round picks, a second round pick, and a third round pick. Over 10.5 million, you're looking at 4 first round picks, and the other, the quirk of the NHL system is those have to be your own picks. So just for the sake of example, it's not just that you'd have to find a team willing to offer $9 million a year for Jason Robertson. That team would have to own both of its next first round picks, its next second round pick, and its next third round pick, right? So there's, it's even more complicated than that, but please go on. I just wanted to make sure I dropped the specific compensation in before you got too far.
Right.
Yeah. I mean,
there's only 12 teams that are even have that. So none of them are all that great.
Right. And I think this is where the importance of that everyone always forgets about when it comes to offer sheets. And well, everyone always says everyone forgets about it, but then everybody who ever talks about offer sheets brings it up. Like, we have, player has to sign, has to agree to it. Because here's the thing. Unlike Ottinger, I'm a bit, there's two different reasons I'm actually a bit more, you know, higher anxiety level. I'd probably be, probably still like, I'd say maybe a 4, you know, not too worried. But one of them is the fact that if he was willing to sign elsewhere, you could definitely foresee a case where, you know, unlike Ottinger, and, you know, goaltenders are voodoo and is elite whatnot. I mean, Robertson was, you know, second place in the Calder Trophy. And if it wasn't for Kaprizov, if his rookie year was any other season, you know, in the past like 5 or so, he probably would have won the Calder.
Yeah.
Kaprizov was just that incredible.
He was a professional.
You know, because he was a professional coming in and a lot older. But anyways, the point being is that, you know, and then he turns around in this next year where you typically see a sophomore slump and he scores 41 goals and is pretty much a point per game player. So I think if you're an NHL team, if you're, you know, a Detroit Red Wings type team or, you know, with the Caps face or something like that, and you're able to make it happen, you're able to find the space, and you're able to get him to agree, then I absolutely think he would be well worth the investment we would well be putting in for an offer sheet on. I don't think it's going to happen, but I think there is a risk there. And, you know, there's also, you know, the possible a team could really try and screw over the Stars and do like a 1-2 punch, you know, like offer sheet Ottinger, so that Dallas matches, and then turn around and offer sheet Robertson, who they really want. But offer sheets typically don't happen because GMs are afraid of, you know, retaliation, which, as we saw between Montreal and Carolina, is apparently a real thing that we actually do have. They actually do have to worry about. It's not actually just GMs making lame excuses. But I mean, if I'm the GM of an NHL team and I can get ownership to sign off on it, and I'm able to, you know, I have the cap space and Robertson was willing, even if it's just Robertson saying, hey, I'm going to sign this because I know Dallas will match and that will, you know, increase my payday. You know, that's definitely something that I would be actively looking into, even if it's almost certainly not going to happen.
Yeah, there's that. The one, and I think he is more likely because also forward performance is a little bit more predictable, and you know, you can do a little bit more modeling around the way that he'll grow. I do think, though, the other piece from Jason Robertson's perspective, it's come up a couple times in the past, but the thing that interests me the most about him is we've talked a couple times about the flat cap. Jason Robertson appears to do one of the flashiest, kind of high priciest skills in all of the NHL, right? He scores goals, right? Generates offense. That is the premium thing, right? Well, he's kind of stuck in this flat cap world too. And for Jason Robertson, that's not going to manifest in him not getting signed somewhere, right? That's not going to manifest even in the Dallas Stars lowballing him, right? They're going to pay for what they've got, right? Because they kind of have to. The interesting thing to me with Robertson, especially looking at the way that, you know, Tkachuk handled his deal most recently, is if you're Jason Robertson, how much term are you really willing to give the Dallas Stars, knowing that, you know, one, you're closing in on real free agency, and two, knowing that the financial universe from which you're drawing dollars is likely to bump up at some point over the next couple of years. Like, you know, if you're Dallas, you'd probably love to give him an eight-year deal of some kind today, right now. But if you're Robertson, you may not want to take that.
Yeah, exactly right. I mean, he's 23 years old, and so at this point, if he takes a six-year deal and with a big payday, he turns 29 and he's in the prime of his life, ready to sign either another eight-year deal or a seven-year deal, and that kind of maximizes his cash for his entire career.
Or he takes a three, you know, he takes a five-year deal, and he's a couple of years younger still, right? Like there are things at play here that, again, I would not be shocked if the issue with Robertson isn't the dollars but the years.
I mean, I think you're absolutely right, because I think if Robertson was like Miro Heiskanen and was saying, you know what, I want to be here long term, I want to sign here for 8 years, this deal would have been done weeks ago. Dallas would have said, okay, 8 years, name your price, and we'll give it to you, more or less. I think it's all about them figuring out what that term is, because I think you're absolutely right. Robertson probably is looking at a bridge term, you know, knowing with the flat cap world and, you know, either getting to free agency or being in a Tkachuk like situation where he is at least closer to, you know, his free agency sign off, you know, or younger, just being able to do a bigger, you know, payday. You know, I think Robertson is definitely looking at, you know, a shorter term contract, more like a 6 years, maybe like a 3 to 4 or something like that. And kind of going back to what we were talking about earlier with Ottinger and kind of mentioning, I mean, I think that is the reason that Ottinger hasn't been signed yet, because I think Dallas is just has to figure out first what their deal with Jason Robertson looks like. Because if you sign Robertson to a long-term deal that is worth, you know, 8 years, and it's, you know, like the Robert Thomas contract, and it's basically like 8 years, say 9 million or 8.5 million or something like that, then, hey, now you know exactly how much cap space you work with. You can probably get on your sign to a, you know, short kind of bridge term deal, you know, 3 million per for 2 years or so, and boom, you're pretty much fine as far as the cap space is concerned. But if Robertson is, you know, digging his heels about wanting a short term or a bridge contract or whatnot, and if maybe the value looks closer to, you know, 6 to 8 million or something like that, you know, less money, or who knows, maybe even how that works out, you know, then suddenly what you can do with Ottinger and that contract or how that looks completely changes. So, I mean, I think the difference here is definitely going to be the term, and we're not going to hear on Ottinger's contract situation at all until we figure out Robertson's.
Yeah. And then the last piece to make there, right, is there is unfortunately a very good example very close to home of what happens if you take the term early and circumstances change. And you know what I mean? Like you hate to say it, but I think we're going to enter a phase of contracts where the adage of like, hey, you know, what you really want to avoid is winding up like John Klingberg.
I mean, Eva Kale McCarr signed for, you know, 6 years in the same cycle. Heiskanen signed for 8. Yep. And it was, hey, he's going to be able to make his payday sooner.
Right. You know? But Heiskanen was young. I mean, that's what he could do, an 8-year deal and still get over that at 29 to 30.
And he also, his 8-year deal is also close to it's 8-something million. So it's not like he didn't take, Heiskanen didn't take, well, I mean, he took a discount because the structure of the sport is so everybody has to take a discount, but he didn't take a terrible, you know, financial position. He maxed out what he could get.
It wasn't a dollar discount. It was a term discount that he took contract to McCarr and, but 2 more years.
Well, yeah, but don't forget that he bought 2 years, only 6 years of that are UFA years. So the first 2 years on that were buying out RFA years where he doesn't have the leverage.
I think the other thing that is kind of interesting to talk about, and it's the reason I have a bit more anxiety when it comes to Robertson and his deal not getting done, is it would not surprise me in a vacuum if we had a player, if it was just Robertson that needed to be re-signed. You know, it wouldn't be surprise me if this kind of went into training camp or kind of further whatnot, similar to, you know, way back when Jamie Benn needed a new contract and was holding out, you know, that sort of concern, that doesn't concern me really at all, and kind of in a vacuum. But then if you're trying to consider the fact that, oh, it's not just Robertson, there's 2 RFAs kind of on the table. And then if I'm Dallas and I'm saying I don't want to sign Ottinger until I know what Robertson's contract looks at, but Robertson is digging his heels and that's not getting done, you suddenly get closer to the season, and then you're suddenly in a situation where you do need to get Ottinger under contract before you'd like him to, because, you know, you can't enter the season with both Robertson and Ottinger holding out, or at least Robertson holding out and therefore you're not signing Ottinger as a result. So I think there definitely is that kind of element that it's a very unique situation for Dallas where they have, even if Robertson is much higher dollar and, as we've mentioned, much more important contribution to the team right now and pure talent, the fact that there's just 2 of them, I think, is very complicating the sayings. And it's a lot more precarious of a situation than, say, like the Islanders and Noah Dobson, or, you know, the Flames, how they were kind of, you know, with Chuck or all these other situations. Like, the fact that it's 2 coming up at the same time, it just really does Dallas no favors.
It also wouldn't shock me if it was all the way on the other end of the spectrum and that there's an internal agreement, you know, that things are close or reasonable with both players, with the understanding of like, hey, Ottinger, you're going to wind up somewhere in this range. We just have to nail down the specifics on both. You know what I mean? Like there's probably, it would not stun me if there was a known range for both players, and this is more an exercise of like, you know, the complexity of, okay, well, if we're going to do this number, then we need to do this many years. And if you want those things, then that, you know what I mean? Like each player is kind of dialing in versus some kind of hardcore impasse. I just don't see, even with some of the comments about, you know, lack of progress report on the Ottinger side of things, it just feels normal. That just feels like you said, they've got to manage both deals. They've probably got to keep it in-house to avoid creating a risk.
Yeah, I don't think Jim Neal's losing sleep on this.
Because, I mean, at the absolute end of the day, somebody gives one of them an offer sheet, you know, that player accepts it, and then they suddenly know what the exact budget is for the other player. This isn't Barcelona. There are levers. I will say the interesting thing to me, and then we can start coasting into the finish line here, the interesting thing to me, not just for Dallas, but looking at what ended up happening in Calgary and a couple of other players, is, you know, Kotkaniemi as well. I do think that we are, and personally, I think this is a good thing. I'm all for player empowerment. I do think that the formerly very conservative in terms of what they would accept contract-wise NHL player base is starting to lurch more towards modern sensibilities, meaning that you're no longer in a spot where guys just take the longest deal they can get every time, all of the time. I think you're starting to see players that are willing to put bets on themselves, you know, that are willing to look at the landscape. And like I said, it wouldn't shock me if either Ottinger, Robertson, or both are looking at this thing from the perspective of what I really want to do is get a good deal now, but a good deal that lets me get another deal. So, you know, all of this is to say, I think to summarize where the Stars are, there is no realistic fear that either of these players is going to walk in the short term. Now, what happens after that is anybody's guess. But this is an interesting developing trend NHL-wide, exacerbated by COVID, that, you know, we're officially out of the world in which an RFA is just going to sign the longest deal he can with his old team, and everybody is accepting of that. So we should get used to, as fans, in future instances, that it's not a given that guys will re-sign, and we should appreciate what we have while we have it. But at the same time, there's no reason to be, you know, putting your Jason Robertson gear up on eBay in anticipation of an ugly breakup. It should be just fine. But, you know, Mark, Tyler, any closing thoughts before we wrap up?
Well, all I can say is if the Stars don't use Tyler's last take as something to win this year, somebody needs to lose a job, because that was the best idea I've heard in a long time.
Love it.
I say next week we do the same subject, except we just take the complete opposite talking points and we just do doom and gloom. Sky is falling. Oh God, what are we going to do?
You know what? That's brilliant. That's what we're doing. Tune in next week. We're doing a doom cast. We're going to bring your most pessimistic Stars takes. We are going to go into the Hurt Locker and we are going to punish ourselves.
I don't think we have enough time for that in the day.
Oh no, I'm ready. I'm ready. I could just roll right now, except Dallas would get hit by a mega storm and you guys would all float away.
The Megastorm is the Doomcast. We're doing it. It's going to happen. Thank you for listening. Don't forget to download. Don't forget to like. Find us and follow us on all the socials. KT, thank you for stitching this together. Tyler, Mark, always a pleasure. Tune in next week for Doom.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.